Okay, colleagues, item 8.6, Treasury Management Mid-Year Review Report 2016-17, report by Mr Fairley, Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support.
Thanks, Provost. I'm sure you didn't mean to pass report 8.5, although I'd be happy to skip over it if you'd like. Financial monitoring. Provost, the financial monitoring report on today's agenda sets out the performance against the revenue budget for general fund services for the first half of the year. As summarised in section 2 and detailed in appendices, we're reporting a net overspend of £1.496 million for the year, and this represents 0.75% of Council's net expenditure. It represents a rise of just under £1 million since the last report. Section 2.3 sets out the movement in general fund reserve, reflecting the financial performance, which give rise to a projected available reserve on general fund of £1.345 million. Provost, conscious of time, again, I'll pause at this point for any questions. Otherwise, Council is asked to note the contents of the report.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I'm happy to note the contents of the report.
Councillor Bryant.
Happy to second. But if I could ask you just one question, Gary, on page 1, 2.1, loan charges are currently projected to be £0.283 million over budget due to less slippage. I don't understand that word, slippage.
So what we're saying is our debt charges that support the capital plan are higher than we anticipated because we spent more in the capital plan than we had thought. So we thought that there'd be, as there has historically been, that projects would slip, expenditure would be slightly delayed because of weather and other factors. That hasn't happened, so we spent more, so the borrowing's gone up.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. We now move on to 8.6, Treasury Management Mid-Year Review Report 2016-17, report by Mr Fairley.
Thanks, Provost. The Treasury Management Strategy provides for Council having a mid-year report, and so the report's on today's agenda. It gives you an overview of the activity in the first half of the year and forecast activity in terms of borrowing for the remainder of the year. Section 3 sets out key economic activity, which has really been dominated by the results of the EU referendum. Section 4 sets out the activity in terms of the Council borrowing to 7th of October, including £20 million of borrowing from PWLB at historically low rates, and still securing investment of our cash-backed reserves above bank base rate. Table 1 and 2 set out the position and weighted investment rates for borrowing, and we're talking about a borrowing portfolio of £253 million and investments which are sitting at just over £83 million. Section 5 looks ahead. Second half of the year, we'll undertake further borrowing to fund the Council's capital investment plans. And again, Provost, happy to pause at that point and take any questions. Otherwise, Council is asked to consider the three recommendations set out in Section 9.
Thank you. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I'm happy to move on the recommendations and to note that there perhaps has just been one good thing to come out of Brexit, which I'm sure Councillor Milligan is really happy about, all that hard work campaigning. And also just to note, in summary, in Part 8 of the report, the officers continue to review the situation, because I'm sure if predictions are in any way factual, that the borrowing climate will indeed remain challenging due to the longer-term effects of the dog's Brexit.
Councillor Bryant.
Happy to second that, Provost.
Thanks, Provost. Just a question. Does the Council have any deposits with Deutsche Bank?
We have deposits with a number of banks. I don't have the information just to hand, so I need to double check and come back to you on that, Councillor Baxter, just exactly where we are. the position changes every day in terms of our deposits.
Thanks. Just to clarify, some of my colleagues look puzzled at the question. There was a report in the Financial Times that suggests that Deutsche Bank could be on the verge of difficulties, let's say, and I was just worried in case we might get caught up in that.
Councillor Mulligan.
Chairman, Councillor Parrish, quite right. Councillor Mulligan is delighted with the Brexit, and I'm sure Alec Neil and not the SNP ministers who voted with me will be as highly delighted. However, on a really serious note, it is a very good paper. It's a continuation of the work from way back when Alec Jamieson and his team managed to get us into this position, Gary Thompson, David Gladwin, and now keeping us in a position where we're actually borrowing at some of the cheapest rates that you can get across Scotland and leading the way in councils. And I think we should actually be congratulating officers for this work here.
Councillor De Vink.
On the issue of the Deutsche Bank, there was indeed a rumour that it was going to face bankruptcy, and then, lo and behold, they produced a profit for last quarter of £480 million that everybody was. But we may remember, and it's not all that long ago, that lots of councils, particularly the one in Orkney, put money with the Bank of Iceland, and they lost an enormous fortune. So I think Councillor Baxter's point is a very good point. We really cannot afford, possibly, in Midlothian, that we put any money with a bank that has got a question mark over it. And I feel this is a role that should be supervised by us as elected representatives rather than just being delegated to officials.
I hope we're not with Tesco Bank either. Council happy to accept that report. Thank you. Item 7, General Services Capital Plan 2016-17. Report by Mr Fairley, Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support.
Provost, members, this report sets out the position for the General Services Capital Plan. Section 2 sets out the adjustments to the plan since the last report and include three projects brought forward today for approval, set out in Table 2. Incorporating those would give rise to a revised budget for capital investment for the year of £36.605 million and a net borrowing requirement of £22.207 million. Section 2.3 sets out performance against budget, and we report a small additional cost anticipated in terms of vehicle purchase. Again, Council is asked to consider the recommendations, which this time are set out in Section 5 of the report.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I'm happy to move recommendations as set out in Section 5 and to approve the projects as outlined in Table 2. And I just noted that this particular report has some detail about the Inspiring Learning Spaces programme that's currently going on across Midlothian. I just want to say it's absolutely brilliant, and I've been out visiting schools recently, and certainly in terms of Roslyn Primary School are doing a huge project, and the kids are so engaged in it. It's an absolutely fantastic project. So just while that's on the agenda. Thank you.
Councillor Bryant.
Happy to second.
Thank you. Council happy to accept these recommendations. Thank you. Item 8.8, Housing Revenue Account, Revenue Budget and Capital Plan 2016-17. Report by Mr Fairley.
Thanks again, Provost. This is the last of the half-year financial reports encompassing the HRA Capital Plan and Revenue Account. The Capital Plan provides for investment in the year of £22.449 million, and at this point there are no material variations to report. In terms of the Revenue Account, we project an underspend of £290,000, and details of the reasons behind that are set out in Section 2.2 of the report. As a consequence, we project that the reserve at the year-end will be £29.207 million, the majority of which is already committed to fund the ongoing investment and the housing programmes. Again, Council is asked today to note the report.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. Really positive paper and a mostly positive picture. Happy to move the report as noted.
Councillor Brank.
Happy to second Councillor Parry.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. Again, a question. It's on page 151. I just want to know why council tax on second homes is appearing in the housing revenue capital plan rather than in the general revenue account.
The legislation provides that where council collects council tax on second homes under the arrangements, that it can be used as a funding source to fund affordable housing. And that's what colleagues have been doing. It's part of our very small element, but still a key part of the funding for the capital plan.
Thank you. Moving on to item 8.9, the impact of exiting the European Union, a report by the Chief Executive, Kenneth Laurie.
Thank you, Provost. This report sets out an initial assessment of the impact on Midlothian of the UK's decision to leave the European Union. It is inevitable there is considerable uncertainty at this stage about the full impacts and consequences of this. Much of the focus to date has been on potential economic impacts, access to the single market, and indeed the matter of migration. But the negotiations relating to all of these issues following the triggering of Article 50 will be complex and detailed. And the priority for the Council is to plan for this changing landscape as the future position clarifies, assembling relevant data and evidence and using this as appropriate to lobby in respect of any particular identified interests. The most immediately identifiable impact will be in relation to EU funding streams. The use of EU funding in Midlothian is broken into two broad types. Funds administered by the Council, or where the Council provides match funding itself, and funds flowing into the area associated with nationally operated schemes, such as the various agricultural subsidies. Details of the current programme operational within Midlothian are set out at section 2.3 of the report, and the other EU funds relevant to Midlothian are set out at section 2.4. In terms of funding, section 3.1 sets out the fact that the UK government has made a commitment to the continuation of the operation of all EU funds until 2020, including providing matching funding allocations through the block grant to Scotland. And subsequent to this, on the 4th of November, I received a letter from the Scottish Government advising that the UK government's guarantees on European funding will be passed on in full. Paragraphs 2.5 to 2.10 set out some of the wider issues associated with the UK leaving the EU and potential impacts on Midlothian and the regional economy. And the recommendations for your consideration today are set out at paragraph 4. I'm happy to take any questions. We'll answer them to the best of my ability. Joined today by Alistair Mathers, who has more details on some of the funding issues relating to Midlothian. Thank you.
Councillor Devink.
Tonight, I am having dinner with the managing director of the European Investment Bank, who is coming to listen to the presiding officer who is speaking at the Tuesday Club. He has funded so far £50 billion in loans to the United Kingdom. £8 billion of those are to Scotland. If we have a hard Brexit, all of those loans will have to be repaid. It really is a nightmare. And I think when we look at these tiny loans that the chief executive highlights, and of course they are very important to Midlothian, they should be seen in perspective when you think of what is going to happen when all those other loans have to be repaid.
Councillor Bryant.
Thank you, Provost. Sorry? Unfortunately not. I have a letter here addressed to Mr. Laurie from the Scottish Government, who says that Derek Mackay, the Scottish Government's Finance Secretary, has announced that he will be passing on the UK Government's recently announced guarantee on European funding in full. And I'll just run through this paper very quickly. On item 2.3, There's 10 projects which we're going to receive funding of around $500,000. The European Regional Development Fund, which includes LEADER, we're going to have, for LEADER itself, it's $3.5 million. Business Gateway, around $500,000. So as long as we get these funds, we'll be able to continue at least until 2020. Following that, who knows?
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I think Councillor Milligan might be pretty happy about this, but I think any of us were now sensing us is quite rightly concerned. And I think there is a threat to some of the funding, but I think one of the things that is not in the paper, and I understand why it's not, is about how we might have rise in demand for some of those grants in the future. Looking at some figures this week that were out from CBI and Edinburgh Chamber of Commerce, looking at a threat of 80,000 Scottish jobs and a cost of Scotland's economy by up to $11 billion a year. When you've got people like CBI and Chamber of Commerce making those warnings, you know, you really should listen. And if we are going to have a period whereby employment might not be so high, we might see people slipping back into poverty, we might see communities slipping back into poverty, and again driving demand towards those grants. So I think it's a really concerning position. I think it's really hard. I mean, we keep hearing Brexit means Brexit or breakfast or something like that. So I think it is really hard. So I really welcome this report. I think it's really detailed and really good. Ultimately, I know that it doesn't really tell us what it is that we need to know, but I'm reassured that by officers that when further information is ready to be forthcoming, that it will be.
Councillor Muirhead.
Can I just say to Councillor Parry, I think it's totally unnecessary to continually refer to Councillor Milligan when we're talking about this. 17 out of the 18 councillors in here would agree with you. You're always talking about us working together. I really think it's unnecessary to continue to do that.
Okay, this report is just for noting and to request further reports to the Council as appropriate in due course, acceptable to the Council. Thank you. Item 8.10, Chief Social Work Officer Annual Report 2015 to 2016. A report by the Chief Social Work Officer. Alison.
Thank you, Chair. This is the annual report for Chief Social Work Officer for 2015-16. Each local authority does have a requirement to have a professionally qualified Chief Social Work Officer, and I am Midlothian Council's Chief Social Work Officer. What this report hopefully will do is help sort of understand some of those complexities and some of the cross-cutting nature of social work service delivery, including in relation particular issues such as things like corporate parenting, child protection, adult protection, and the management of high-risk offenders, but also really showing the key role that social work plays in contributing to the achievement of a really wide range of national and local outcomes that we meet. And it's really about how we've been able to deliver on that performance across the piece. My intention is not to go through the full report, but I do want to pick out a few key highlights. The structure of the report is set out for us by the Scottish Government's Office of Social Work. So this is a report that Chief Social Work Officers from around all 32 local authorities will be completing, and we've been given key headline factors that we're needing to contribute towards within that. So the structure is set for us so that there can be a level of comparison around Scotland, and there will be a national report that will be coming out in due course early into the new year. What I would say is that in terms of some of the summary reflections, some of the key challenges and developments, it has been around us strengthening our community services across both adults and children's services, alongside ensuring that these community-based developments, that we have continue to ensure that we have services for people with more intensive support needs. And there's been a real commitment for the Council in amongst some of that. There have been real changes and challenges for us in terms of our governance arrangements with the new integrated health and social care and how we're developing those services across some of those user groups and those ensuring that we keep that interdependency between children and adults really clear and critical within this, whilst it's only adult services that is part of integration at this point in time. The real challenges for us within Midlothian as we continue to meet some of those demands. There's been significant house building development. We've got the train, which is obviously attracting people to move to Midlothian. And part of this, we've got an ageing population. We've got far more people with complex and challenging behaviours. we've got health inequalities being experienced in some pockets of Middle Lothian, particularly that's related to age and disability, poor mental health, and how we can care for individuals within that. So there are real challenges for us to meet some of those. And one of the key challenges for us, and the challenge across all of Scotland, is about how we meet this with a fully equipped and motivated workforce. And central to the role of Chief Social Work Officer is about how we develop our workforce to meet some of those changing needs, to get a greater sense of staff across the different sectors working together in a whole joined-up system, about how we get involved training and support towards our new models of care, and how we ensure that, particularly in places like home care, we have an ageing workforce at this point in time, how we attract new people into that workforce and what we can do to ensure that this is a really positive working environment for people to be in. One of the key areas for development that we've been having has been about embedding self-directed support into Mid Lothian, really ensuring that the legislative requirements are being embedded into business as usual for us. And I think certainly within children and families, we've really been at the forefront of developing an outcome-focused approach. If we look across Scotland, some of the work that has been done by colleagues in children and families around an outcome-focused approach, particularly with some of the more complex cases, is really positive. And we're getting lots of requests from around Scotland about some of our learning and development and some of the tools that we're using. So there's real positives there. Public protection is one of the key areas, but you have a further paper today which is on the report of the Public Protection Office, so I won't cover that in detail here. One of the key areas that we are always being focused on is about user and carer empowerment and about how we engage the users and carers throughout this process. And there's good examples in the report of that work and how we're feeding into new strategies and finding ways to ensure that people are engaged in the development of our services. At Section 9 of the Chief Social Work Officer report, we've given examples of areas that we feel are good examples for us. So we've got examples of preventative intervention through things like the supporting parents in early years through the work of Sure Start, some of our outcome-focused services, particularly around some of the recovery-based services for people with mental health and substance misuse, about how we've been applying the Integrated Care Fund, things like the House of Care approach that we've been exploring in the Transforming Care After Treatment, and around the better and greater use of technology that we're using, and the Telehealth Care Strategy Manager who's been appointed to help manage some of the health conditions such as diabetes and dementias in a different kind of way within Mid Lothian. So I hope you will share my feelings that there's been a real positive amount of work that's been going on across children and families, adult social work and criminal justice over 2015-16. I hope you'll support the recommendations found in Section 5 on the report. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. I agree that there's lots of work been going on. Some of it been very, very good. Some things I wanted to highlight were that Mid Lothian and East Lothian are leading the way in public protection, demonstrating that shared services, including our resources, the staff and the buildings, provide excellent service for our public, and that shared services do work very well. So congratulations on that. Also, the prevention work carried out by Children's Services and in intervening prior to crises and managing difficult situations with families is now paying dividends. So that's been fabulous forward thinking and planning. And also to the newly qualified social workers, I know from personal experience that working, studying and managing a private life is not easy. So congratulations to all of them and their mentors. And I think we should agree the recommendations.
Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, thanks, Alison. Alison, you talked about reshaping the workforce for the future, and we're very much aware, if you go back to previous papers there, you can see an almost £1.4 million overspend that's been identified in the area of home care and for home care packages. And in a meeting we had some couple of weeks ago to discuss some of the reports that have came forward regarding the problems we're having producing these packages and the failure of some of the outsourcing that we've done and having to go back out, I think, to others. And I'm being careful not to name anything here now in case I'm no meant to. I'm so sorry if I'm being kind of not as forward as what I'd like to be. But the reality is when we talk about reshaping the workforce future, it does have a massive impact on the council, and it's about how are we going to do that at a time where I made the point that there are many companies out there paying national minimum wage, and we were struggling to get people in to work within these teams that were sort of four days on, 4 days off, had a better job progression, had better wages, had better services and stuff like that. And you quite rightly, yourself and Alistair, made the point to me that it takes a special kind of person to come in and work in that kind of environment. But quite clearly, you can see where things go wrong, and we didn't have the workforce, we didn't have the trained workforce, that we end up where you're heading to £1.5 million of predicted overspend. And I know last year it was predicted about £1 million, and you managed to draw that back a bit, and I'm sure that some of the work you'll do there. But the obvious effect that also then has on people being, and the unseen cost of having that, with people being kept in nursing homes and hospitals and that, because we can't provide these care packages, the reablement services, not being able to work in that. And it's about, do you think you've got the right support? Have you got the right input for the corporate management team politically to say, right, well, here's where we need to go with this? Because it's quite critical that in the services that you're delivering, that forward thinking, and we're all aware of the time bomb that's coming along, in fact, I think it's here. Are we getting the things right? Do you have the right resources for retraining, to recruit, etc.? Because it does have a dire knock-on effect to the council's finances.
In terms of support from the corporate management team, yes, I do feel that we have that support. It's recognised in terms of the challenges that we face both in children's services and adult services. And we get good support from our colleagues. Obviously, some of the challenges we face in the workforce are around the external provision as well, in terms of the outsourced providers and how we ensure. And some of the changes that have been made in terms of living wage hopefully will have some impact on that. Obviously, the living wage for people working in care came into place from the 1st of October. So we're optimistic that some of the work that we're doing with providers will make that more attractive. I do think health and social care integration offers us opportunities in terms of some of the challenges you were mentioning about things like career progression, that for certainly some of our frontline carers, I think if they're seeing themselves, they're not necessarily seeing themselves going into one of the office-based work or going into social work, but potentially going into nursing or potentially into occupational therapy or physiotherapy might be something that they can see much more easily for themselves. And there's opportunities, I think, with integration for us to offer different career path opportunities for people. Part of it is about how we value carers as well. I mean, I think that carers, historically, frontline carers have not been viewed necessarily as positively or as professionally, and have potentially been looked down upon by some of the other professionals and the public at large of it's they're just a carer. But actually the quality of work that they do, the commitment that they show and demonstrate on a day-to-day basis is invaluable. And actually some of the work that they do is far more challenging than some of the other people, because they're dealing with this on a day-in, day-out basis. I think there's a lot that we need to do. There's work that we're doing with our learning and development team. It's about how we develop Social Care Academy to attract people in, younger people into care. Once we have them in care, certainly Alistair Short, who's been managing some of the care at home services, has been out meeting some of our frontline staff, and he was really commenting, for him meeting some of these staff for the first time, that real sense of commitment that he's getting from our staff to support the people in our community. And it's about how we possibly tap into some of that passion that they feel for their job, and how we look at recruiting within our younger people looking for different positive destinations, and how we encourage people to come into this. I think it's a difficult job for us to explain adequately to people. You can get a lot of personal satisfaction having started delivering frontline care for older people in their homes and working in day centres for people with learning disabilities. You can gain a lot of personal satisfaction from that, but it can be a bit daunting to think about going into that. So we need to make it easier for people to try it out. We need to make it easier for them to meet people who are passionate about that role and see what it is that's important for them. And we need to be able to evidence that there's good progression and that we'll support people into different roles throughout that. And I think that's a real challenge for us, but I think it's something that we can all commit to and find a way to make work.
Okay, Councillor Russell.
Thanks, Provost. Page 12 or 174, whatever you're going to look at it, with regards to the people with drug and alcohol misuse, I welcome the fact that these groups are combining together with the mental health staff, because I think it is important that people are, because obviously misuse can lead to mental health and vice versa, obviously. So it's good that people in the professions are coming together to work to make sure that they don't fall in between and they get neglected in that sense. So I'm really pleased that this is happening. I've been involved, I think, for the last few months, etc., when the whole Legal Highs was on the go, and I've signed up for Recovery Connection board that's been done at the Recovery Cafe in the Baptist Church. So I really welcome this, but I'm interested as to where the new Recovery Hub will be.
Sorry, we are exploring a build St Andrew Street in Dalkeith, but it's still at an early stage. And I don't think we're envisaging the cafe relocating there. It's about bringing professionals together and also having clinical space where we can do more group work, etc., with folk. But those proposals are at a very early stage.
Okay, Councillor Bryant.
I'll second Councillor Johnson's motion.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that report, Alison. Item 8.11, Community Payback Order, Annual Report 2015-16, report by Joint Director, Health and Social Care, Evelyn.
Thanks, Provost. This is the annual report that's presented to Scottish Government and is brought here to Council. Section 2 provides the background to the report. I'd just really like to highlight, Section 3 pulls out the highlights in this report, in particular the feedback from people, from offenders who've done community payback orders. The work that's been undertaken to consult with local communities on the use of community payback orders and their benefits locally, feedback on the whole is positive from communities. The team have also worked to increase the number of projects that are available for this activity, but they've been particularly keen that there's an interaction between the offenders who are engaged in this work and local communities so that they can see the benefit of the work that they're doing for local communities. It also highlights the work that is undertaken with offenders to confront the impact of their offending on others and also to address the issues in their lives that have led to their offending. The new structure for community justice will increase the focus on community engagement in order to ensure there's an active dialogue around the profile of offending and across our communities and the effectiveness of the actions that we take to address it. Members are asked to note this report.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson.
I'm happy to note this report. There's lots of work going on there to address offending and re-offending, and there's some positive report backs both from the service users and the recipients of the unpaid work, and it demonstrates that there is greater opportunities for restorative justice. Thank you.
Councillor Bryant.
Happy to second.
Thank you for that report. Item 8.12, Extra Care Housing, report by Joint Director of Health and Social Care, Evelyn. Thank you.
Thank you, Provost. This report seeks agreement on the inclusion of extra care housing provision in Phase 3 and the Phase 3 housing programme that's been agreed by Council. Section 2 outlines the background, which includes the shift, the rebalancing of care, in particular the role of housing and related developments in housing, including adaptations, dementia-friendly housing and new technology, and the contribution they have to make to rebalancing care. Section 2.7 to 2.9 highlights the housing developments that have been completed or underway. They include Cowan Court, the development in Pennycook for which we need to find a new name, and the proposals around the developments in Gore Avenue. Sections 2.10 onwards outline the proposals for further developments in this strategy, including the transition of existing sheltered housing to extra care provision. That's been done already in Loanhead, where trusts have done that. The remodelling of wheelchair accessible housing, looking at ways that we can deliver care in more integrated ways to allow us to deal with higher level needs. And as well as the proposals around inclusion in council new build, and we're also in dialogue with RSLs around potential new developments in their area. Members are asked to consider the recommendations in section 4.
Thank you, Evelyn. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. I absolutely propose we accept these recommendations because it's giving people security of tenure and independence in their own homes for longer, whilst giving assurances to family and friends and their carers. I think we should also think about changing the name for the complex care houses that are going to be built, because I'm going round it in a huge mouthful saying the former John Chance sent. But I also think it's really important to keep people in their own communities for as long as possible, where folk can rely on and use their own informal networks as support rather than the formal statutory bodies and families, and use local facilities and amenities and be independent for longer. And I believe we should be striving to keep people like that for as long as we can. And I think it's really important the security of tenure which people will get when they go to extra care housing, as opposed to nursing homes where there is no security of tenure and you run out of money and you could not have any security if that happens to you. Thank you.
Councillor Devink.
Yeah, when we are looking at new build housing and we talk about wheelchair accessibility, I think what we really need to do is to think out of the box and find a way how we can look after the elderly in a different way than we have been doing. On the continent, there is quite an interesting way where young people are given lodging and housing, well, housing and their food by the people that provide the services to the elderly, and they then work during a week something like 17 hours looking after the elderly. Not only do the young people like it, the older people are really very happy with that development. And this is something that we ought to look at. I have spoken to officials about it, and they seem to be interested. But here we have a chance to do some new build, and we ought to do it differently than we have always done it in the past. And I would really be very grateful if we would give officials the chance to look at it in much more detail. They have said in the past to me they can't afford it, but I think there will be ways in which we could afford it, and it would be a very, very novel approach where Midlothian could lead the way.
Councillor Rosie.
Thanks, Provost. It's perhaps looking at which way, how we can take other ways forward on this, but I think we are moving forward on, when you think that we've done away with the elderly staying in Pentland House, which was agreed wasn't fit for purpose. So we are moving forward. Cowan Court's been a success, and we're building on that. And I think what we're doing, and I can see the houses going up at Eastfield and certainly in Pennycook at the moment, and I think that's a great step forward. And it is vitally important as we move to keep people in their houses as long as possible with the support. And I certainly am supportive, and I'd second Councillor Johnson in that one. But yeah, we shouldn't just sit back and say that's it. We should be looking at other ways that we can do this and manage how we deal with the elderly. Certainly, some of us aren't that far, maybe from here. So yeah, second that.
Okay. Councillor Muirhead.
Can I just ask if that's the second time I've heard Councillor Devrink mention that particular circumstances described there. Is it something that officers are looking at, you know, so that we can come back with some informed information about it? Because on the surface, I mean, it may be something that we would want to consider, but I really don't know enough about it to say.
I'd be very happy to do that. One of the members of the IJB has been involved in a development in St Andrews where they used located students with owner-occupiers who had spare bedrooms. So I think there's a number of different ways that we could look at it. And that way, you know, there was that exchange between people getting their lodgings but then making a contribution back. But it's certainly something that we would be very happy to take forward and have a look at in terms of... And it's how it would work in Midlothian and our communities and which ones it would work better in. But yes, it's certainly one we could look at.
Okay, thank you for that report, Evelyn. Item 8.13, East Lothian Midlothian Public Protection Committee Annual Report 2015-16, a report by Head of Adult Social Care, Alison. Have you been caught unawares?
This is the annual report for the East Lothian Midlothian Public Protection Committee. So the East Lothian Midlothian Public Protection Committee covers both adult protection, child protection, and covers against violence against women and our support for offenders in the community. It's a joint committee which is the first in Scotland, which brings together not only those key areas under one umbrella committee for us to ensure that those cross-cutting issues that people experience in those areas are focused upon, but also to ensure the first of the areas where we've had two local authority areas working in that. It does include social work, Police Scotland, NHS Lothian, education, housing and the third sector. We've got two subgroups on part of that, one of those looking at learning and development, and we have one that looks at performance and quality improvement. There is a team that's based in Brunton Hall in Musselburgh, and that supports the work both of the committee and ensures that there's good links between the strategic direction of that committee and the work that is done on a local basis to ensure that operationally we're able to manage and maintain that service. What you're asked to note, the progress that's been made by the committee during 2015-16, the report, you should have an attachment to the full report as part of that as a paper, which will take you through many of the key areas and the statistics that we have available to us and the work that's been undertaken across all of those key areas. Have you not got a copy of that report attached? Sorry, Pat.
It was requested that due to the length of the report, it was put copies in the members' library and on the electronic members' library.
Okay, thank you for that report. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. I'm happy to note the report and the progress made by Mid and East Lothian and our partners in the Public Protection Committee over the last year.
Thank you. Councillor Bryant.
Happy to second.
Okay, thank you. Item 8.14. Must get our papers done. Scottish Social Security Consultation Response, a report by Director of Education, Communities and Economy, Dr. Smith.
Thank you, Provost. This report provides the Council with a response to the Scottish Government's initial consultation on the proposed Scottish Social Security legislation. Members are asked to note that this is a community planning partnership response undertaken by Midlothian Financial Inclusion Network, MFIN, who undertook a whole range of stakeholder engagement. Membership of MFIN included Citizens Advice, Pennycook and Dalkeith, Melville Housing, Midlothian Food Banks, Midlothian Voluntary Association, Christians Against Poverty, Welfare Rights and Housing and Revenue staff. The consultation is made up of 38 questions and the MFIN responded to all of the questions, which runs to some 50 pages. Due to the timeframes of submitting response by the 28th of October, the response was signed off by the Chair of the Community Planning Partnership, Council Leader Johnson. Members will note that the risk section 3.2 highlights a large number of areas which we will need to be aware of as this consultation develops to a bill, so that the issues highlighted in 3.2 are addressed by the Scottish Government. The Council is requested to note the attached partnership response. My colleague Alistair Mathers, Communities and Performance Manager, is happy to take any questions, unless he's disappeared. I've not looked behind me.
Behind you. Thank you, Dr. Smith. Councillor Parry.
Thanks for sadly all still here. I'm not surprised at this response. I think it's really, really good. The level of detail in it, and I think it really reflects the type of engagement with the stakeholders that we've done. If I could have written the response, I certainly couldn't have written it any better than that. I think the only disappointment is, like you said, is that we couldn't have agreed it within the time frame, and I wonder if there's perhaps a better way that we can do something like that in future. But I'm happy to note the contents and congratulate those who put it together.
Council, happy to note the report. Thank you. We now move on to private reports, if there's any member of the public here.